Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am so excited to be here today with Scarlett Harris, a financial professional who's really focused in the veteran space. This is part of our veteran series as we're looking to make sure that our cultures that we're building on a consistent basis are inclusive, that they are relevant and impactful, not only to those that we currently have in our population, but also those that are looking to transition from military life into civilian life. And this series has been a lot of fun to put together. And I welcome the dialogue today with Scarlett, as she is an accomplished financial professional who is dedicating her service to serving those who have served us so diligently and so valiantly. So Scarlett, thank you for being with me today. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive in just a little bit. I mean, you are an extremely passionate individual in helping those reach their financial goals, and you have served in a variety of capacities in the community, in the veteran space. And I know that this is not only in a professional capacity for you, but also this is very near and dear from a personal perspective in your life. So I wanted just to give you the opportunity to share with our listeners really how supporting veterans has come to fruition for you, and share just a little bit about your background, if you don't mind.
Well, that's a loaded question.
Aren't they all?
Yeah. So there's a lot. My father was a blinded Korean War veteran. And so I grew up in a home with him. And there's a lot more to that. I married a man who joined the military. And so I've experienced the humanitarian deployments as well as the deployments for war. He was part of the Desert Storm era. I'm currently engaged to a 6 combat tour veteran.
Wow.
And my father-in-law has 3 Purple Hearts. My son-in-law is an active duty Marine. And so there's a lot of heritage there. I tell people that I never understood the legacy of where I came from. My parents named me Scarlett, which a lot of people think it's about the movie or it's just a cool name. But in the Marine Corps, they call it the Scarlet and Gold Traditions. Because my dad had lost his sight, he wanted to hang on to part of the Corps. And because I was his eyes, the Scarlet is spelled with 1 T.
Oh.
And so as I journeyed through life, there was a lot of different things that have occurred. My dad would often be called to Heinz Blind Center in Chicago.
Okay.
He was exceptional with how to transition with a disability and being a veteran. And so exceptional that people sought him out to help other people transition. So he would fly into Chicago O'Hare Airport, if you can imagine being blinded, and this is 50 years ago, and navigate and go through the city and then get to the center to go find somebody that was struggling with losing their eyesight or some other capacity that of handicap that they may be having. And Dad would befriend them. And then a few weeks later, there would be a knock at our door and there would be a military veteran and they would come stay with us for a while. And Dad would show them how to live and navigate. And so I heard a lot of stories, and that was a big part of my life. And that equated over to, as I've grown up in the military arena, doors just opened for me. And I had an opportunity to teach the Advanced Staff Academy at the air station. That's the cream of the crop. That's your senior enlisted. And there was a competition going on between California, Quantico, and air station is Lejeune. Or Lejeune. And I was asked to come in and help those Marines write their thesis about the Marine Corps. And that was very powerful. And again, the name comes into play. I remember being like 24 years old and standing up in a bunch of Marines, 500 of them to be exact. And I was about 8.5 months pregnant and I stood up and my voice cracked and that was all they needed to go. And so somebody, you know, cracked out, "Well, frankly, my dear, I don't." And so it was like sink or swim at that point. And I remember saying to the Marine, you know, "Learn to read, Marine. It's with 1 T, not 2. And it's your tradition." And then, you know, everybody fell out laughing because it was their history. And they weren't expecting me to know their history and their legacy. So that kind of kickstarted it. And from there, I developed another program. When you talk about military jobs, they call it a military occupational specialty.
Right.
That's their career. And the acronym is MOS. So I helped develop a program for young Marines that were failing when they got to their schools. So basically, military people go to boot camp, and when they come out of boot camp, they go to their military occupational specialty school. That's where they learn their career. Well, a lot of people joined the military because they didn't read or write, didn't like school to begin with, so this was an easy avenue to have a career and have a paycheck. And then they get there and they have to study, and it was a whole thing. And so I would test them like on Mondays or Wednesdays, and then I would go back and teach them how to read or write. And it wasn't that they really didn't know how. It was a process, and they'd hit a brick wall. And I think we do that in life a lot. So we have to break down walls and talk in language that people understand. And that's how I did that. In like 6-8 weeks, they were picked up by their school. Military missions or goals never leave anyone behind. You know, we never leave a man behind. So can't even do that in the beginning. They're coming out of boot camp. You can't leave them behind because they can't read or write. So therefore, we developed a plan to execute and assist them to get where they need to go. So, you know, when we developed Wounded Warriors, Shannon Maxwell and I sat on a soccer field talking about what needs to happen for these Marines. Tim had had a TBI, and I remember Shannon just saying there needs to be more. There needs to be more done because he's a great guy and he has all these things and we're just struggling. Well, next thing I knew, Shannon was shaking President's hands and Wounded Warriors is in all the branches. I've worked with a gamut of groups from, you know, USO to, you know, BBC to Purple Heart, Rolling Thunder. They all have a unique twist and culture.
Yeah. Well, your journey is definitely incredible. And just you sharing how your father really instilled that ability for you to experience that transitional process. It's just, I mean, it's incredible. That's the only word that I have for that. You have this raw attachment to something that not everyone is able to experience and understand. And then you, even talking about the educational components that you have been able to put into play, you mentioned the ability to really just distill it down and to use language that is common for all. And I think one of the skills that you really have is the ability to take what that military transition looks like and then apply it to helping those individuals, you know, reach their goals, whether that be financially, professionally, and through advocacy, you've been able to do that, which is just, again, incredible. That's the only word that I have for it. And your story just really resonates with me. And you focus and specialize in your practice on supporting that military transition guidance. So when you think about leaders and business owners, individuals that are listening to this conversation between you and I, what are some of the common misconceptions or challenges that veterans that you've experienced, whether that be in your personal life or through the service work that you have done, how has that come to fruition for veterans when they're looking at understanding the benefits that might be offered at a particular organization, or, you know, how leaders can address some of those specific veteran transition concerns that maybe they don't have a common language around today?
So I think you have to just go back to that word transition, because a lot of times as business owners, we go through a lot of attrition, right?
Right. Yes.
So how do we retain? How do we retrain? When you look at veterans, they stick to it. They endure. They're there. They're loyal. They're going to stay the course. And so a lot of the value comes, and a big part of creating that culture is identifying that they're valued. So there's a lot of misconception when we talk about military, PTSD being one of them. That's an acronym for post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. So it's become a catchphrase and people are kind of afraid of it. Oh, the military, they have PTSD. And I haven't researched the data recently, but the last data I had, it was like there's 7% of military have PTSD. And then the common people, us civilians, the number is 6%. There isn't really anything to be afraid of. So we need to just take down that wall.
Yeah.
Because what does that mean? PTSD means I've witnessed something that is traumatic, or I've gone through something traumatic and I'm learning to cope with it. And as long as I have good, sound coping skills, and that's what we do with our military, we, you know, we provide medical, we do a lot of things to support that. There isn't a need to be afraid of. The media sometimes creates a negative awareness about situations. We do need to be aware and we do need to consider and we do need to evaluate things but we don't need to have biases because there's really no fear in that. It's not a healthy environment. So when you hire somebody that has like PTSD or transitioning out of the Marine Corps, one of the things I like to tell employers is talk to them, get to know them. Because what they just did, number one thing, they just hired security for their company, whether they realized it or not.
Right, yeah.
A military professional isn't going to quit doing what's been developed in them. It is at the core of their being. They're always protecting. So like if you see them out, a lot of times military people, like if you're in a restaurant, they sit in the power seat so they can see the door, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They want to see what's going on. So when you hire them, think about their office location. Can they see the accesses? Because if something ever happened in a business, they're going to be the first to act, and they know how to act. They've been trained in that. And so like if you have committees at your company, you know, empower them and put them in a place where they can teach others. I use this a lot in churches. You know, a lot of things are happening to churches, and then people are like, ah, you know, do we go? Do we not go? What does that look like? And then if you see somebody, like in North Carolina, we're an open carry state, so you may see somebody carry a weapon, and people react differently to that. They're scared of what they don't know. And so I know, like locally, and we're predominantly veteran, you will see guys who've gotten together and they actually patrol, and they just walk around the churches. They look for, is there somebody that has a backpack that might be kind of doing something weird? And this works in business as well. They identify risk. You know, if they see somebody, domestic violence. I had one of the guys not too long ago come up to me, and there was a lady, and she was in a domestic violence situation, and they de-escalated the situation, and, you know, we got help. So they're really good at identifying. And the other thing I would tell employers is when we talk about military, everybody thinks it's foxholes and guns and violence and war. It's not like that. The military is a city within itself. A base is a city within itself. So they have restaurants. They have food. They have stores. They have computers. They have technology. They have to have logistics. They have to know how A is getting to B. When you have to take 1,000 men and transport them in 24 hours somewhere, you also have to have toilet paper, and you have to have, you know, food and water. So they're very good about thinking and planning and being strategically involved in problem solving. They are very direct. So talking with them, sometimes maybe we have to tell them to tone it down a little bit, because to them, it's just, they blurt it out. But they're problem solvers. If they come to you with a problem, they're also going to have a solution. And sometimes trying to understand the difference between the military and the civilian world is what that may look like. And so explaining and being able to soften the directness, maybe with, you know, staff, or let the staff know, hey, they don't hate you. They're not trying to be mean to you. They're just, to them, it's an order. It's a directive. We don't fluff it up. We just execute. Because if you think about their culture, if they talked about it and all around it, someone may actually die. So when we say things, we just execute.
Well, and I think one of the points that you made, which I had not really thought about, which was very cool for me, is like you talk about a base being its own city, right? And there is that opportunity when we think like transition of military into civilian life. As you said, like I think most of the population immediately goes to combat or the skills that they would have been trained on in some type of action capacity, whereas there is an entire community of support that needs to occur in order for that to even exist. And so when we think about individuals that might be transitioning from, you know, a military career, you called it, you know, an MOS earlier, right? So when they're transitioning from that, from their career in the military, their skill set is vast. It might be in technology. It might be in logistics, like you were talking about that. And just peeling that back, taking the opportunity to sit down with that individual and really understanding their journey in the military space. So we better know as leaders, as employers, as business owners, how to apply their skills to what we're looking to have and retain in that particular position. That was like kind of a light bulb for me. And I mean, I know that all that happens, but as you kind of think about when someone says, okay, military, I think we automatically lean into that more combat space, the skills that someone might have there versus in the technological or logistics or food service or whatever that might look like, which is, that was eye-opening for me. So thank you for sharing that.
Something else I want to bring up, because they are a team and they work as a team, if you can imagine in training, you know, there's a lead, and when you're executing a mission, everybody has a role. So when you're working with military, and we should have this in place anyway, you know, I worked in HR for many years. We're supposed to have job descriptions and a strategy, and we have a scope of what we do, right? They are very in tune with what their scope is and what their place on the team is. But when they transition from the military to the secular world,
in a civilian capacity?
Yeah. The communication is not always clear. There is a chain of command with military people, right? So when and I don't know how well everybody interprets ranks, but like if the Lance Corporal or the Corporal comes in and says, hey, take care of this roster or take care of this problem. And then the sergeant comes in and says, hey, take care of this. Then what the military person was working on automatically drops the initial, because it was only a corporal or Lance Corporal, picks up what the sergeant says, right? Well, then the next layer comes in and says, hey, the sergeant major says, hey, I need this done. Well, then the general pops in and says, hey, I need you to make a call, or I need you to do this. So the military person, the higher the rank is the priority, right? So when you talk about being in a civilian sector, and I experienced this at home too, for the record, we'll be working on a project and I'll say, oh, we need to add this to the task list. And what happens is I see my Marine pack everything up and frustration sets in, and he starts to head on to the next task. That's not what I was saying. I was saying add to the task list. For him, the directive was stop what you're doing and go over here and do this. And when you're working in the workspace, the same thing happens. You know, Betty Jane comes over and she's like, oh yeah, we've got to get this report done. And then, you know, Bobby Joe comes over and says, yeah, we've got this project we're working on. And so they start communicating. And so the military person is like, okay, what is the priority? And then the boss comes in and he says something, and he's thinking 3 months down the road. He's just sharing because he's got this new teammate. He's just trying to communicate, love on him.
A little more visionary.
Yeah, include them, value them, you know, support them. But what he's saying is, no, don't do anything here. Focus on this. So we have to make sure we determine priorities and explain that to the team so that we don't get confused, and maybe actually have team meetings where we say, hey, XYZ has to happen, and then we're going to work on this, because they will execute a mission. I mean, that's what they're trained to do. And if you tell them to do something, they're going to get it done, and they're going to come in early, stay late. They're going to do whatever it takes to get it done in the best way they can for you. So there is a lot of frustration with that. And often I coach military people when they're getting out of the service, take a 6-pack of jobs with you because you're going to get frustrated. And it's because when they get to the civilian world, there isn't clear communication, and that prioritization is a thing for them, and it just escalates for them, and it makes them very unhappy because all they want to do is succeed.
Yeah.
And they want you to succeed. And so they don't communicate like we do. They're not big talkers. So they just get quiet, and then they may be gone. And so when you see them get quiet, what you need to do is say, hey, what can I do? What, you know, you got anything going on with your work? What is something that you really enjoy? What is something that's frustrating you? Talk to them about that and maybe open it up. Say, well, when you're in the military, we understand there's a chain of command, and we do have a chain of command. It's a little bit more relaxed. Oh, and by the way, I want you to think out of the box. I want to hear your ideas, because in the military, it's very important to stay your lane, because it could be the difference between life and death when you're in combat, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they have great ideas, and they dream for the day that they become the senior in the situation. But until they're trained and been promoted to that, they hold it all in their little world until it's time to express it.
Yeah. Well, and they're extremely, you know, I think to the best degree tenacious, right? So you said this about, and that's a really great point as we're thinking about employers and as business owners, if we're looking to best support veterans in our work communities, and also in just our community in general, but in our work community specifically in a professional respect, is to be cognizant that that chain of command, it does exist. And yes, as you said, it is a little more relaxed in a professional setting, but just being very clear on here is the role that you play on the team. Here's what you're responsible for, what you own. And here are the areas or projects or opportunities where you can dream and share the ideas that you have in a collaborative environment. And just be really clear on when that exists and where the proper time and space for that is. And also on the other side is knowing that they will leave no stone unturned when it comes to finishing something. So being very clear to say, here's the vision for what we're working on. Here are the parties that are involved and the role that everyone plays. And here is what success looks like. Here's what 100% done is. And everyone knows exactly how they fit into that picture, would provide that environment for them to succeed, for the business to succeed. And then ultimately to have that conversation to say, okay, what are your ideas around this? So involving them in that discernment and that ideation in the beginning, so everybody has buy-in and they also know how to execute appropriately. I mean, that was something that really clicked for me was, I just love the word tenacious in general, but I really think that that tenacity is something that all business owners could really lean on as they're looking to bring on veterans into their workforces. So you had mentioned, and I just wanted you to share a little bit more, elaborate about the involvement that you've had with organizations like Veteran Business Collaborative. And you've definitely alluded to some of those success stories and how you've been able to support those that are transitioning. Can you just elaborate a little bit about maybe some of those specific initiatives or meaningful impacts that you've seen as the work that you've done with those organizations in supporting that transition from the military space into civilian life?
Yeah. So again, military professionals are very much do what you say and say what you mean, right? So whenever we're trying to recruit or transition and find jobs out into the world, there are specific groups. One I really like is called SkillBridge. And that's where the last 6 months of the career of the military professional, employers sponsor them and kind of create an internship or apprenticeship. And they're still active duty, but there's a waiver, a special waiver put in place that they can go and start training for whatever job they may be thinking about heading to. So like I have a ton of these IT guys who do cybersecurity and all that kind of stuff. So finding companies that will partner with SkillBridge and allow opportunities. And the other ones, I'm trying to think of a really good success story. HVAC, heating and air companies, they're not afraid of anything. They'll crawl under a house. They'll crawl in an attic. Is that what they really want to do with the rest of their career? Some of them, yes. And some of them aspire to be more. And there's a lot of programs out there. I'm thinking right now that the hot topic is project management. Every time I've talked to like a sergeant major, which is like people retiring out, the highest on the enlistment side is an E9. And the same thing on the officer side. It's kind of weird to me that they're both going after project management jobs. And so I guess if you're not used to the military world, there's two sides of it. There's an enlisted side and there's an officer side. And the officer side means that they went into the military with a degree. So they hold a higher billet and they're the authority. They're you're the terms lieutenant, captain, general, whereas the enlisted are more like the sergeants and the master guns and stuff like that. And in the old days, it was a clear distinction in education. But today, and this is another fallacy that civilians don't understand, today people are going into the military to pay for their education. So they already have their education. They may go in as enlisted, but they have their degree. I have a young man right now sitting on my desk that he's powerful. He has his master's in business. He's a great communicator. I'm very hireable. And I'm just like, what do I do with this resume? This guy is so hireable. And I'm like telling the guy, go through SkillBridge. We got to find you a company that will, you know, just pick you up and take you. His resume is powerful. Anyway, I guess where I'm trying to go to, the SkillBridge program provides this opportunity. And I have had clients go through this project management course. And I have a kid that was in Wounded Warriors that is now out in California, no doubt. And the company's like, hey, Austin, Can you find any more guys like you? You know, because he's so good at it that he's grown the company because he's all in. He's all, you know, he bought into the company and is powerful. BBC, it's called the Veteran Business Collaborative. They've started a few in other states. Wilmington, North Carolina has a very powerful group. There's about 80 members there. We've tried to start one here at Jacksonville that we're still growing and trying to get it up and running. But the reason the Veteran Business Collaborative is powerful, especially in that area, they are veteran business owners. And they come together once a month and they meet at a pub or whatever. And they invite new veteran business members and they do referrals. And because they know each other and have that camaraderie going on, they trust one another. And so then they also refer to other businesses and they allow non-veteran business owners in as well. And so it becomes this great referral system, but it's also a resource. Hey, I'm struggling with this. What does it look like for you over there? You know, I'm trying to do this over here. And they help each other with marketing and with executing and just kind of talk through things, whatever problems it may be. And so it's just this big room of veterans just trying to resolve issues. And then a few civilians that pop in there that are tapping into it. And it's a very powerful growing group. Another thing that I was trying to do with Chamber of Commerce's was to identify your veteran-owned businesses or businesses that do hire veterans and put a sticker in the window, you know, support them.
So Scarlett, you mentioned SkillBridge and how, you know, you have a resume on your desk right now for an individual that is powerful, a great communicator, someone who has a higher level of education and is looking to transition into a civilian professional responsibility and role. When you think about how you would engage a potential employer to elevate that individual and advocate for that person, what are some of the skills or abilities that that individual has that you would very highly recommend that an employer or a business owner look for when they're looking at a resume and it talks about that military experience? Yes, we have the education component, but what are some of those elements that are like those kind of glaring glimpses of the obvious that maybe somebody might not think about when you're thinking of onboarding a veteran? Like, what are some of those that are just 100% like you should not pass up on somebody who is talking about their relative skills?
Okay, so first of all, as hard as they try, and they pay people to help them write their resumes, right?
Which is genius. They should. Yeah. I'm on board with that. Yeah.
Because you talk to them and you look at the resume and it looks like they've never had a job in their life because they do it all by rank, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was a Lance Corporal, I was a blah, 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 blah. And they'll list things like their schools or they'll list like deployed to XYZ, but it doesn't show what that means. In their world, it's saying, yeah, I managed, you know, 200 people and I had to make sure that security was in place. I had to make sure that
they had transport, like,
yeah. And accounting, big word. Yep. They manage budgets, right? Now the budget's always there for them. So the difference between civilians and military, and I always find this interesting, they get very anxious when you talk about budgets because military is just there and they have to be fiduciaries of it, right? They have to handle and manage that money to the best of their ability. They put out bids, they have to explain things and vet things and make sure things are right. In the civilian world, we have to create our own income, right? And so we're looking at the budget. But what equates over is this person understands fiduciary responsibility. They understand they have to stay in that budget and that they have to get the biggest bang for the buck. And they understand accounting. And when we're looking at hiring veterans, we don't get that accounting piece. When I hire somebody out of college, right, they may have the degree, right? Just like this guy has the degree, he has a business degree. But what else he brings to the table is experience, hands-on work experience, problem solving, dealing with things, and, you know, just that solid backbone that you need sometimes to get through things. And to look at things objectively. When you're first coming into things, you pass tests, you have the knowledge in your brain, but you don't have the experience to execute or to understand all the questions to ask because you never had that come up before. So it's really interesting when you get an experienced civilian at the table, and then you get the young college student at the table, and you get the military person at the table, you've got the perfect storm. I mean, you really do.
Yeah.
Because you're covering all aspects of things.
Well, you brought up a really good point that when, you know, you're looking at that resume and the how a military individual might list something might not have those buzzwords, right? That would be, we would say, oh, well, that's, you know, apples to apples. It's more like, what are the questions? Like, how should I ask? And this is just me thinking out loud, right? So if I see on there X, Y, and Z, I know that that is a question I should ask around that experiential learning that that person had in that in the accounting space. Or, well, this means that they manage 200 plus people. Like, that is something I think definitely is missing, because with a lack of understanding as an employer, as a business owner, as a leader, what that relative skill is, that definitely could be a hindrance. And I think that just being able to unpack it and just ask really inquisitive questions would help so much so in allowing that military professional to express what that experience has been for them and how they would be able to apply those skill sets to whatever role they're looking at to potentially be onboarded in your organization.
Yeah, they definitely, when you look at their skill sets, leadership is always at the top, right?
Right, yeah.
And then, but in the civilian world, we're going, well, really, is that leadership? Because they voluntold everybody things. So is there a little bit of transition with an adjustment in that? Maybe, but they still lead and they know how to lead. Financial responsibility, they get it. They have self-sufficiency. They effectively communicate. It's very direct. They don't, you know, beat around the bush. They have integrity. They have technological skills. They have the ability to perform under pressure. They adapt, because their whole thing is, you know, flexibility and adapting to whatever's going on to survive. That's what you have to do. Problem solving. And for the record, they seek responsibility. A lot of times when you hire your veterans, it's not about the money. They like the money. Yes.
Yes. It's not about the money, but it is. I mean, there's always some element, right?
It's about praise and the title. It's about respect. In the military, as you climb up the rank structure, you respect that person above you. They've been there and done that. So when they carry a title, it means something to them. I have a guy right now, he was hired to manage a warehouse and they made him part of the management team. But you know what they didn't do?
Give him a management title.
No, they gave him the title, but they don't include him in the management meetings. Now, and he's in the warehouse, right? And he's doing things. And can he bring something to the table? Absolutely. And he has a lot of great ideas. And I hear about it a lot. You know, I have coffee with him or whatever. And his frustration, and he's been with the company several years, and he loves the company, but his feelings have been hurt. So now he's thinking about it's time to move away. And so I've been trying to whisper in the employer's ear, hey, you're getting ready to lose somebody that you value, and all you really need to do is invite him to the team meetings and value him and just
let him be part of that ideation and deciding
his
process.
His title is management. So like in the military, he's not the general, but he might be the captain or the lieutenant colonel or whatever, because he's in management. He's not the entry-level guy. And so whenever you're treating him like an entry-level guy, you're crushing his spirit. He's a warrior. You can't do that.
Yeah. That's a really good example of something to be just cognizant of, right?
These military people are organized. They're disciplined. They're realistic. They have solid work ethic. They know how to perform under difficult and stressful situations, because that's all they do. They're always put in a pressure cooker. They're always training and they're always in the pressure cooker. So another thing that pops up when you hire military people, because they're so physically active in the military, you know, they're running, you know, 10 miles or humping 30 miles. All of a sudden, they're more sedentary in their work environment. And this is only good for the company. When you really think about what we're doing as employers, when we hire vets, all we're doing is enforcing what we need to do anyway. One, we need to have good job descriptions. We need to have good strategic planning. And we need to have adaptable environments, ADA compliance. Let's say we hire somebody with Asperger's or that is handicapped. We find ways to work with them. It's the same thing for the military. Whether disabled or not, we still need to adapt and we need to work with them and create a universal design in our workplaces. And I'll give an example of this. When you think about when we had sidewalks in the day, now they have like the little ramp, you know what I'm talking about, where you push your strollers up to the next sidewalk or ride your bicycles. Back in the day, that wasn't a thing. There was a curb there. But somebody said, hey, this doesn't work because I'm in a wheelchair and I can't stay on this, and you get mad when I'm in the street. So people went through the process. There was legislation, and so we made it ADA compliant. What they did was make it a universal design because it was good for everybody, right? So when you're hiring military individuals, think about your universal design, the things that you want, the adaptability, the flexibility, you know, the problem solving, you know, the loyalty, the team building, and protecting your best interest and everybody else's best interest. That's what you're hiring. It's your dream in one package. You just have to unfold it, you know, unwrap it ribbon by ribbon.
Cool. And, you know, that I was just going to ask you too, kind of as we come to the concluding part of our conversation, like what advice you would give to business owners who are passionate about supporting and employing veterans. And so I really feel like you just nailed it with that universal design concept. So when you're thinking about the culture that you're building as a leader, as an entrepreneur, that universal design where it is, it serves the person and it serves the organization and it serves all that might come and be affiliated or encounter your company, that is the secret sauce. That is the winning all around, because every person, military, civilian, whatever sector they're in, they come as a unique individual. They have characteristics and skills that are relative and applicable. And it's simply, as you said, unwrapping that package, unfolding and pulling different strings, right? To see how that story has developed for that person, how their journey not only has helped them become the person that they are, but who they're going to be in the future, and how that can both benefit not only what they would like their legacy to be, but also support the mission and the vision of the organization that you are looking to continuously create and evolve and put into the community. And Scarlett, I cannot thank you enough for just sharing your insights. I mean, as a financial professional, you work in supporting the complex military transition, and you are a guide to them in that financial space to make sure that they're able to meet their goals and their needs. And you also have such a service heart in the ability to spend your time on boards and part of these advocacy groups and making sure that more leaders, more entrepreneurs, more business owners understand the military transition so that they can better support our veterans. And I can't thank you enough for your willingness to share that. And as we kind of get to the end here, is there anything that you would want to share with leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs that are listening to the podcast as they go out and support our veteran community?
Yeah, I would definitely tell them to create a buddy system, you know, mentoring a veteran. They can always reach out to me. I'll give them a resource. Don't try and manage a veteran. Lead them. They have a different intensity. So when you give them a mission, they're going to execute, and you need to make sure that we're communicating so that we're not overwhelming the team or them. And then give them feedback regularly. They need feedback. They work on praise and promotion. And if they're in their lane, they need to know they're in their lane.
That's awesome.
We're trying to be military friendly business owners, but we don't know what that looks like. We're trying to execute, but we really just need to step back and look at them. They're really just people, and they have skill sets that we've never even unwrapped because we've put them in a box. You know, we tell them to think out of a box, but we've put them in a box. They're just not foxholes in machine guns. They have skills and that apply to all kinds of jobs in the civilian world. So keep that in mind as you meet somebody, unwrap them and enjoy what you learn. There's so much they have to share, and they've been all over the world. Their experiences are vast. And one last thought, because when we talked about the DEI numbers and stuff, when you're hiring veterans, a third of the military population, you know, hits all those billets. So the diversity's there, all of it, everything's involved. And there's also advantages. There's the VET 500, there's WOTC, there's credits that you get on taxes for hiring these people. And there's a whole slew of other things that I could talk on, but there's more than just hiring an individual. When you hire a veteran, you hire a family member. They become your extended family, and they're going to retire with you. So there was something else I wanted to add. Don't forget your veteran spouses. They've been going to school and following and supporting the military professional their whole entire career, but they have a whole slew of talents and skills that employers don't understand. and they tend not want to hire them because it looks like they have broken work experience. But they have to understand they're serving as well. And so just because work experience looks broken doesn't mean that it's not consistent and that it's not relevant. And value that. Unpack it. And I'll leave on that note because they've given as much, if not more, than the actual military member, because they never know, often if they're even coming home and they're trying to keep the family going, and you got to keep things rolling and you have to endure, just keep doing good. You just keep doing good one step at a time and it all comes together.
Well, that's amazing. Scarlett, I've so enjoyed having this conversation with you. And I know that your passion for serving the veteran community and helping those veterans and their families is just unmatched. And so, we'll definitely put your contact information in the show notes if anyone would like to reach out and just explore this conversation further. But again, I can't thank you enough for having this dialogue and the work that you do in supporting the veteran community. And I would just like to thank our listeners for coming along in this journey with us. We hope that you found this content impactful and relevant, and we will continue to bring you new ideas and concepts and support, not only for our veteran community, but also just as we are looking to build impactful and healthy cultures.